Thank you for taking the time to listen to this life-changing message from the Ministry of Faith Bible Chapel. We hope this message will encourage you in all parts of your life. At the end of this message, you will hear more information on how to contact our church family, as well as directions for you to visit us for any of our worship services. Until then, join us for the service in progress.
So we've been going through this series that we're calling Simplify, and the idea is simplify our lives in several areas that we're going to look at over the course of a month. So Pastor George started last week. And the idea is that we're going to identify a few areas where we can simplify in a way to unclutter our souls. And so even as we say that title, I know that some of us are going, yeah, that sounds good. My soul feels cluttered. I need that, and I want that. And if you're like me, I need that. Life is fast, and life is busy these days. And we're moving 100 miles an hour, and it's easy in the pace of life that we live, this 24/7 kind of world that we live in, to find ourselves cluttered on the inside with our souls overwhelmed with the world that we're living in. And we have strained relationships, and we have areas of our lives that we're putting pressure on. We're overwhelmed with our work, and we find ourselves tired in our bodies and tired in our spirits and tired in our minds and out of balance in our time schedules and out of balance in our finances and out of balance in our relationships. And we have cluttered souls. And so we want to identify just a few things that will give us a chance to unclutter our souls. It's interesting. It's an interesting picture to think about our souls being cluttered. I hate clutter, but we tend to do it in our home really fast and really easily. It kind of looks like this picture of this kitchen. And this happens in our home, and I'm sure it happens in other people's homes. It happens fast, actually. Clutter builds up, and suddenly you can't see the kitchen sink anymore. But it's interesting to think of our souls as cluttered and maybe what that looks like. The truth is, we know what it feels like. We know what it feels like to have cluttered souls and the overwhelmed feeling of being weighted down and where life just feels complex and it isn't simple anymore. And we're trudging through mud. It's like that show, if you've seen it on TV, The Hoarders. This is the picture I get, where they hoard tons and tons of stuff. Sometimes it's good stuff, lots of times it's just junk, but they hoard so much in their home that pretty soon their home is impassable. It's unlivable, and they're literally stuck in their own homes because they can't navigate through their hallways and into their bedrooms and kitchens and so on. And all of them say, I never intended for this to happen. It just happened. I never thought that this was what my life was going to be like. And that's our story. We never intend for our hearts, our souls, to be cluttered. And yet they get that way easily and sometimes without us even noticing it. Suddenly they look like this picture here, and we have a sense of exhaustion and fatigue and tiredness and frustration and no freedom, being bound up and not being able to move and being over tired and over budgeted and in debt and overstressed in our relationships. And that's the fruit of a cluttered soul. Interesting, I don't think Heather knew tonight that we were going to be actually talking about being thankful. One of those points that we're going to come to tonight is being thankful. I think God has a message for us that he wants us to hear tonight. So this is the focus of our evening tonight. We want to kind of identify what clutters our soul, at least one thing, and then what can we do to unclutter it? Now, if you've been around, we've said it several times, but I'm just going to say it again to tie it into the context of tonight's message. As a church, we're celebrating our 50th year. We're celebrating our Jubilee year as a church family. And this is a significant year for us. It isn't just a celebration, though. And it's not just a celebration for the sake of celebration. I really believe this is a God-ordained moment that he has set aside for us, Faith Bible Chapel, as a church family, to celebrate, but to also, and to celebrate everything that he's done in that 50 years, but to also actually do the work of a Jubilee year. See, it's a year that God has set aside for release and freedom and being reset, if you will, being rebooted, if you will. So what do I mean by that, by reset and rebooted? A few months ago, my cell phone popped up on the screen that I could do a system upgrade. So I was like, cool, system upgrade. So I hit system upgrade, and it upgraded my phone and instantly quit working. The upgrade was too big for the phone or something, and it just quit working. And so I would poke on something to make it work, and I would wait and wait and wait, and it slowed way down to the point of total frustration, and I wanted to just toss it a few times. And finally, I was just like, I'm just going to get a new phone because this is not working. And a friend said to me, no, what you need to do is just do a factory reset on the phone. There's a place in your phone you can go do a factory reset. It cleans everything off and takes it back to being like brand new. I was like, cool, brand new. So I did. I backed up all my material on my phone, did the factory reset. I did this over my Christmas vacation because I knew that I needed a lot of time to do it. Reset the phone and boom, in 5 minutes, it was like brand new. I had a brand new phone. And see, this is what God has done for us and what he's done for his people. He created and weaved into the fabric of the Jewish people this reset button that was a part of their culture, a part of their calendar, this thing called a Jubilee year, where it gave people a chance to restart, to clean the slate, to go back to as it was in the beginning, and to have a fresh start, a fresh chance, a second chance on life, to be able to be free from the way things were, to be able to go back to a clean slate, even to be free from life's consequences and realities. You know, in the culture of the Jewish culture, they were able to, if they had financial problems, they couldn't pay off their debt, they could sell themselves into slavery and then pay off their debt by being a slave for one of their fellow Israelites. But then the year of Jubilee would come, and at the year of Jubilee, they would be set free to have a second chance on life, be set free from slavery. Likewise, if they owned a piece of land that was part of their family inheritance, and they had to sell it to be able to pay off their debts or to be able to have their life, at the end of 50 years, they would receive that land, that inheritance back as a part of that Jubilee. So God hardwired into their culture and into their schedule a rhythm of rest and reset. As they came out of Egypt, he hardwired this into their schedule. And he gave them a rhythm of sequential rest periods, big ones and small ones. The Jubilee was the big one. The small ones happened every single week. So once every week, the Jewish people were commanded to take a Sabbath, or in Hebrew, a Shabbat. And they were commanded to not do any work during that day. And during that day, they were to focus on God and to refocus on their relationship with him and to rest their souls, to rest their bodies, and to rest their minds, and to come before God and to reestablish that reality that God was their creator, that God was in control, that God was the one that they served, that this world that they were working in wasn't their world, it wasn't their work, it was God's work and God's world, and that God was in control, and that God was the one that was the master over their lives, not them. And that's what happened every Shabbat, this mini Jubilee, if you will. It gave them a chance to to say with their actions, we trust you, God, so much that we're going to take a whole day off of work. We trust you, God, so much that we're, in a day that we could be making an income, in a day that we could be getting ahead, in a day that we could be establishing our future and our security, we're going to take a whole day off. And in that day, we're going to say, we trust you, God, to establish our security and to help us get ahead and to provide everything that we need. We're going to trust you. And to reset their hearts during this period to say that everything that we have, God, comes from you. It doesn't come from us. It's not the work of our hands that's made this. It's you. And so that was what happened every Shabbat, every Sabbath. They would reconnect with God, take the clutter out of their spirits, and get their hearts free again. And then several times scheduled into their calendar throughout the year during holidays and festivals, they would have another day off in addition to the Shabbat, or they'd have a whole week off. And it was a part of the rhythm. They knew when it was going to happen with the festivals and with the holidays every year that they would continue to have these days off. And they weren't just days like we do as Americans just to celebrate and go eat hot dogs, because they wouldn't have eaten hot dogs anyway. They're not kosher. It was a day to celebrate and to remind them who God was and what he had done for them to get them to this place. It was a celebration of God. It wasn't a celebration of themselves. And so that happened routinely throughout the year. And then once every 7 years, God commanded his people to not work the land, to allow it to lay fallow, and to not work the vineyards and the fields, and to rest themselves and to let the land rest, and to reset, to reboot, and to get ready for the next 7 years. And then during that year, that sabbatical, they were just to rest and trust God again to provide the food that they would need for that year. And we see over and over that God did do that. When the people were obedient, then God would provide for them what they needed during that year. That year was called, in Hebrew, it's called a Shemitah. And so they were to, and the word literally means release. Shemitah means to release. That's what Jubilee is. It's a year of releasing, of releasing our hold on things and saying, God, we trust you. We trust you with our lives so much that we're going to let go. We're going to release. And we're going to believe that you're going to take care of us. And that's what God weaved into the schedule of the Jewish people. And so they were supposed to do this once every 7 years, have a Shemitah. And then after seven Shemitahs, they would have the year of Jubilee. So seven times seven, 49 years. The 50th year, they'd have this beautiful celebration of Jubilee. And God's rhythm of rest for his people, big and small, gave them the opportunity to reset, to unclutter their spirits, to unclutter their souls, to give them a second chance, to give them a chance to make life simple again. You see, God is a God of simplicity. Mankind makes things complicated. Religion makes things complicated. But Jesus said, my yoke is easy. My burden is light. And God's message to us of salvation and of love is a simple message. It's not complicated. It's not hard. And he wants for us, for his people, to live a life that's uncomplicated, a life that's free of the bounds that bind up the people around us, the people of the world. He wants us to be free in our spirits and free in our relationships, free in our finances, free in every way that we approach the life that he's given to us, in a way that we say, God, we trust you. Your message is simple, God. You love me just the way I am. And you've given me this life. You've provided everything that I have. And so we see this over and over, God, that God speaks to his people in very simple ways, not in simple as in stupid, but in simple as in understandable and grabbable and doable. We complicate it, and we make it more difficult than it is. So tonight what we want to do is look at just one area where we get out of balance, one area where we become complicated, and we make it complicated, and then we find ourselves cluttered and overwhelmed and struggling to make life work, just one area. I'm going to say that there's four areas, and we're going to talk about those in just a second. But this is one major front in our lives that easily gets cluttered. It easily gets complicated. It's like that kitchen sink that before we know it, suddenly it's messy again, and like, darn it, now how are we going to fix this mess again? So our goal tonight is to look at five ways that we can simplify our lives in the area of our finances, and look at the way that the relationship that we have with money and the relationship that we have with finances. Now, already I hear some of you going, really? Money? We're going to talk about money? Aren't we talking about money on Sundays? Well, I was talking to John and Shelley before, and I said, you know what? When Pastor Jason and I started talking through this series, we knew what the series was about, but we didn't unwrap every single week to poke in there and say, what is every week going to be about? We didn't know this was going to be about money. But this is what my thought is. God did. And I think for some reason, God's putting his finger on this idea of money. I know he's doing it in my life. So I can assume that he's doing it in our lives as a church, as a body, as a believing family. And so before you tune out this idea, because as soon as we start to talk about money, people get all weird, would you just listen to these five things first, and then you can get weird after you leave, okay? Let's poke ourselves through these. I find myself in my notes here. So money, or our finances, is one of the major fronts of our lives. And if you're like me, there's been many times in my life where I've just said, I wish that money was not a part of my life. The hassles that it brings and the complications and the decisions that are all wrapped up in money, I wish that I didn't have to deal with them. And so if you're like me, you've had those feelings and you've had those thoughts. And yet it is a part of our lives. And so this is what I believe. God has put into our lives intentionally four different areas where he wants to bless us, where he wants to test us, where he wants to teach us, and where he wants to expose what's in our heart. And he's given these four things to all of mankind, no matter what culture they're in, no matter where they live in the world. These four things show us what's in our lives and what's in our hearts, and it gives God a chance to prove to us that as our Father, he loves us, that he cares for us, and that he's going to take good care of us. And these things are time. Our time and how we spend our time, how we view our time and use it and abuse it, our money, our finances, our wealth, and how we use them and misuse them, and how we view it, the relationship that we develop with it, our relationships, our earthly relationships with other people, and how we connect to those and how we work in those and allow him to work in us in those. And then lastly, number four, the idea of our talents, our gifts, our abilities, our calling. I'm wrapping it all up in one to say our work, the work that we do with our lives, with who we are, with our bodies, with our minds, with the gifts and talents that God's weaved into us. Tonight, we're just going to look at one of them. We're just going to look at the idea of our finances, our wealth, our money. Next week, we're going to look at the idea of our relationships and how that clutters up our souls. But tonight, we want to just ask this statement. Imagine what your life would look like if money behaved properly in your life instead of making you do all of the insane things that you've done over the years. Or imagine if money no longer had the power to tie you into knots and to leave you feeling overwhelmed. So imagine those two things. Just imagine freedom from what money normally does to most of us. Does it sound tempting to you? I hope it does, because it does to me, and I believe that what we're going to present tonight will give us the ability to simplify this very complex part of our lives, this idea of our finances and our money. So I want to share just five things that we can do to simplify this and to bring ourselves back into balance where it comes to our finances and to our wealth. The first one, are you ready? The first one to simplify our finances is this very simple belief, and it's going to come up on the screen here, that all I have comes from God. It's a simple belief, and I believe or I think that most of us as Christians would say, I believe everything that I have comes from God. Well, it's easy to say that, but we live in a culture, and you can verify this with me, that teaches something completely opposite. It teaches us that what we have is what we've made of ourselves, that all of that we have is because we are this rags to riches, self-made man or self-made woman, and it's the work of my hand and the sweat of my brow, I've created this. And I've established that. And I've done this. And that's the culture around us. And we buy into it. And we live within it. And we'll say as Christians, everything that I have comes from the Lord. It belongs to Him. And it comes from Him. And it's because of Him. But I can tell you because of personal experience that when the rubber meets the road, we don't really believe it. And so listen to my story. Melissa and I, my wife and I, after about 2.5 years of marriage here at Faith Bible Chapel, we moved to do missions. We went to a year in Washington, D.C., and then we moved to Israel for 13 years. And in that position, we had to raise support. So we quit making a paycheck as teachers. We were making, both of us were making paychecks each month. So we quit making an income, and suddenly we started living by support, which meant our friends, our family, and our church were supporting us. They would send us money. And we never knew exactly how much they were going to send us. Exactly. Sometimes we would see a pattern, and we never knew when it was going to come. Sometimes it would be monthly, and sometimes it would be sporadic, more sporadic. And we began missionary life, living by faith, living by support. And it was very exciting, and in the end, was very, very exciting. And I wish that everybody could live that way. Because what happens when we have a paycheck every week? We think we're the ones that are providing it. And so here's my story. We were living as missionaries. In the first couple of years, we didn't have very much, and we weren't spending very much. And so it was really simple. But then we moved to Jerusalem, and we rented our own apartment. And we rented an unfurnished apartment, which meant we didn't have a bed, we didn't have tables, we didn't have anything. So we had to start getting those things. And now our finances were really, really tight. And in that place, I realized, I'll never forget this season, when I started looking at what was coming in, I started looking at what we were going to need to pay, and we were way short of what we were going to need to pay. And our personality wasn't like, you know, we couldn't do the Benny Hinn thing, no offense. We couldn't say, send money now, you will be rewarded. We just didn't have the ability, personality-wise, to do that. And so I remembered that we prayed. We said, God, we need your help. And it's interesting, when you do those prayers, I did it because I knew I was supposed to do it, but I didn't think that he was really going to answer it. I didn't think that he'd really just give us lots of money. I mean, consistently, we'd only had so much money coming in. That's not going to change. But we prayed, God. And then I'll never forget the day that my boss called me into his office, and we're going through different things, and then he hands me the report of our report of our financial income. And he said, you got a big gift this month. And I look at it, and it was $3,000. It was like three times the amount that we got every month. And I sat there like in shock. And I remember driving down the road and saying, wow, God, you've answered our prayer. That's really cool. You really are providing for us. And so I started to see this pattern. God really did provide for us as missionaries, and it always came when we needed it. And I remember having this dialogue with him, and I was like, wow, you really are providing for us. And I felt him whisper into my heart, I've always provided for you. And then my next thought was like, but not when I was working as a teacher, that was me. He was like, no, that was me. I'm the one that gave you the job. I'm the one that gave you the ability. And suddenly it hit me for the very first time in my life as a Christian. God really did provide me with everything that I needed. He was the one that gave me everything that I needed. And we had enough to continue to live as missionaries. And the story even gets better. You know, as we went along, we were telling a friend the other day, we were able to do amazing things on support, not frivolous things, although I suppose there was a couple times we were frivolous, but we were able to do amazing things by the support that God brought in. And after a few years of living like that, I suddenly realized I wasn't looking at the people that were sending us money anymore. I was looking at God and realizing, this is from God. this is something that he's done in my life. So people who are living simply and in a healthy relationship with their finances are those who recognize that everything that they have and all that they are comes from him. So we need to keep moving along. Number two, the second alignment connected to our finances. I live joyfully within God's current provision for my life. The easiest way for us to complicate our lives, our financial lives, and to clutter them up is to be discontented. Discontentment is, this is what I mean by this, and we've all had this experience. We look around us, we're living in America, and we look at the people next to us and we look at ourselves and we say, I don't have enough. What I have isn't big enough. What I have isn't new enough. What I have isn't as nice as that. I want what they have. I need what she has. I have to have what that family has. And we suddenly find that we're discontent with everything that we have, and nothing else satisfies me. Discontent wreaks havoc in our hearts, and it creates clutter in our souls. And the best way for us to deal with that is to learn to be content with what we have. And we have a lot. So let me say that again. The best way to be to eradicate discontent is to be content, to learn to be content with what we have. And we have a lot. Do you realize that as an American citizen, you have more, you live better, you have nicer things, and experience greater general wealth than 99% of the rest of the world? We don't really see it because we're living right in the middle of the United States. But I guarantee as soon as you go to the edges of the United States and step off, you plummet quickly down to a completely different lifestyle. I want to show you this website where they show us income and wealth compared to the rest of the world. So if you're living in the United States, U.S. dollars, and you live in Arvada, Arvada is the average income of Arvada is $61,000 a year. But you can do 60. We'll do 60, okay, Marianne? So Marianne's going to show where we fit in the rest of the world. Maybe you need to do it one more time. Yeah, let's do 50,000 because we're going to need to reset that. Okay. If you make $50,000 a year, below you is more than 99% of the rest of the world. Does that make sense? Let's do one more. Let's do, let's do 35,000. We're still at the top. Let's just do one more for grins. Let's do 20,000. We're still at the top. Even if we only make $20,000 a year. Now, the thing is, that doesn't mean that we don't have financial challenges. It doesn't mean that we can't buy certain things, and that there are certain things outside of our ability. But the key here isn't what we can afford and what we can't afford. And the key here isn't what we have and what we don't have. The key is being content with what we do have. And what we do have is a lot. The general wealth period of an American outclasses everybody in the rest of the world. But we don't know that because we're so used to the abundance that we have, we don't realize how rich we really are. The key is being content. The author in Hebrews says, your life should be free from the love of money. As he's trying to talk to these new Christian believers and give them what their life should look like, he says, your life should be free from the love of money. Be satisfied with what you have. For he himself, talking about Jesus, has said, I will never leave you. and I'll never forsake you. In other words, Jesus is our supply. We need to look to him for everything that we want and everything that we need. Be content with what we have. Paul, a little bit later, talking to the Philippians, gives us this example. He says, I don't say this out of need, for I have learned to be content in whatever circumstances I'm in. Look at that phrase, I've learned to be content. That means there was times in his life when he wasn't content. I know both how to have a little and I know how to have a lot. In any and all circumstances, I've learned the secret of being content, whether being well-fed or hungry, whether in abundance or need. Contentment is a learned skill. It obviously doesn't come natural in our lives, but it leads to a simplified life as we learn to be content with what we have and with our finances. So the statement I want to leave you with is whatever your provision level is today, insist on being content right there. And always be grateful. Amen. And that's the key to contentment. Gratitude says, what I have is actually enough. What I have satisfies what I need. What I have is big enough and new enough. I don't need the newest. I don't have any want. I don't need to keep up with the spending habits of the world around me. I'm rich because God sees me, he cares for me, and he provides for me. The third financial alignment to help simplify. I honor God by giving the first tenth of all my earnings to his purposes in the world. If you're like me, instantly you hear that and you go, okay, wait a second. Pastor, you just crossed the boundaries here. But hang in there for just a second, okay? And I want you to follow this. It's easily said, and yet it's a challenge. We said that it was a challenge at the beginning, didn't we? There's four areas where God challenges us in our lives, and one of them is in finances. And so it's going to be a challenge. There's a few of us, I'm convinced, that when it comes to tithing, they're like this. Every single week or every single month, the tithe check gets written or gets donated online, and it just happens because that's how it happens. But for lots of us, it's a challenge. And more than not, we find that the amount of money that we have and the amount of money that we need don't match. And so it's tempting over and over again to slide back away from that idea of giving. I grew up here at Faith Bible Chapel, and I grew up with the understanding of tithing, but I grew up in a home that didn't really tithe that I know of. At least we didn't talk about it at all. So I never got that example. I think mom tithed and dad didn't. And if we gave, it was infrequent. And so I never really learned it, and I never understood it. But then when I came to know the Lord, I was 22 years old. I started tithing, and I tithed every single week. Not because I had to, but because I wanted to. I was saved. Jesus Christ had saved my life. I wanted to give back as much and more that I could possibly give. And so I gave, and I gave, and I gave. And then Melissa and I moved into missions. And suddenly, it got challenged. And so that period of time that I was just explaining to you, there was this season where I quit giving tithes. I had a bad attitude. I said, you know what? I shouldn't have to pay tithes. I'm a missionary. I'm living on support, and that's enough of a give. That's enough of a sacrifice. I don't have to give. God understands. I don't need to give more. I'm already giving my life. I don't have a pension. I don't have a savings. We're living on support. So we kind of quit giving our tithe. And then that crunch time came. And in that crunch time, you know, God's so good to us. In that crunch time, the Holy Spirit came and reminded me, this is my principle. And so we started giving our tithes in our poorness when we didn't have any money. We started paying tithes again to our church in Jerusalem. And the next day we were millionaires. No, just kidding. That's the way the TV evangelist presents it. It didn't happen that way. But we began to give our tithes, and the next day wasn't when we got our $3,000 check. I don't know when things began to change, but they changed. They changed. And more than that, my attitude changed. And our condition changed, and we were able to buy a bed for our house, and we began to tithe again. But I'm sad to say that I've repeated that process two more times in my life since then, where I find reasons to not pay my tithe, and I give it a good excuse, and I give it lots of real good reasons. And then sooner or later, my heart, my soul is all cluttered again, and things aren't working, and it's like walking through mud again, and I can't pay my bills. And then the Holy Spirit speaks into my heart again. This is my plan, Mike. It isn't Pastor George's. It isn't the TV evangelist. This is my plan. This is my way of blessing you. This is my way of testing your heart. And we began to give tithes again. And every single time, we've seen the exact same process happen over and over again. All the clutter goes away. The doors open back up again. We're able to pay our bills. And somehow we make it through. And always giving when we didn't have any money to give. Who among us can't relate to having more debt than dollar at the end of the month? Or buying something that we didn't have money to buy, spending frivolously? The point is that we've all veered off the course one time or another. We all have dysfunctional relationship with money at one time or another. Maybe you have it now. But God says, you can trust me. You can trust me if you will put me first. I'll take care of all of your needs. Honor me, and I'll honor you. That's the promise from our Father, from God. And so here's the thing. I don't want you to just take my word at it. I want to challenge you to test God in this area. I dare you to trust God in this area. If you're giving infrequently, then you need to start giving every month or every week, whatever your pay periods are. If you're never giving, then you need to give. And this is my challenge. Take 1 month and test God. Give 10% of your income during that 1 month. Faithfully give it to him without thinking about who's getting it, what's happening with it, where is it going. You just do it as you're doing it to God. I guarantee you, you'll be able to stand back and watch God do amazing things in your family and in your life. And it isn't going to be $10 and God gives you back $100. That's not how it works. It's blessing in your life. It's blessing in your marriage. It's blessing in your relationships and in your relationships at work and your ability to bless other people. It comes in lots of different ways. Fourth thing that brings alignment to our finances. I set aside a portion of all my earnings into a savings account for emergencies of giving opportunities and for my later years. So after giving 10% in my tithes, give 10% to yourself. Put it away in a savings account. Squirrel it away. And I can hear people on the inside saying, I can't even pay tithes. How am I going to pay 10% into savings? But this is a biblical principle. And you're looking at me and you're going, you're crazy. This is a biblical principle that removes the clutter from our lives. And that's our goal, to simplify our lives. So after we pay our tithes, to set aside some into a savings account. This is what some very wise words in Proverbs tells us about this concept of saving and storing away and putting aside. In Proverbs 21:20, precious treasure and oil are in the dwelling of a wise person, but a foolish man consumes them. Proverbs 13:11, money wrongly gotten will disappear bit by bit. Money earned little by little will grow and grow. Proverbs 10, idle hands make one poor, but diligent hands bring riches. The son who gathers during summer is prudent, but the son who sleeps during harvest is disgraceful. Finally, Proverbs 6 says, go to the ant, you slacker. Observe its ways and become wise. Without a leader, administrator, or ruler, in other words, nobody telling it what to do, it prepares its provisions in the summer. It gathers its food during the harvest. It's about preparation for the financial winter. See, the financial summer, the excess of cash flow doesn't last forever. There will be a financial winter when the car breaks down, when you have to have that unexpected visit to the hospital, when a tax bill comes in that you weren't anticipating. Those financial winters will come, and God wants us to prepare for those so that our souls will not be cluttered, so that we'll be free in every way, financially and emotionally and spiritually. When we do this, we eliminate financial clutter in our souls. Fifth, our fifth money-related alignment. And then we're going to wrap this up. I live each day with an open ear toward heaven, eager to respond to any whisper from God regarding my resources. This is where it gets fun. This is where God allows us to participate with Him in blessing other people and sharing His blessings with us. The blessings that He wants to share through us doesn't depend on how much we have. There's lots of ways that God wants to speak through us and bless through us, whether we have $1 to our name or $100,000 to our name. It doesn't matter how much we have. The idea is that we're participating with God and that we're open to sharing His blessing in our lives with other people. So listen to this story. This is by a woman named Etty Ogan. It's called The Rich Family in Our Church. I'll never forget Easter, 1946. I was 14. My little sister, Osi, was 12, and my older sister, Darlene, was 16. We lived at home with our mother, and the four of us knew what it was to do without many things. My dad had died 5 years before, leaving Mom with seven school kids to raise and no money. By 1946, my older sisters were married, and my brothers had left home. A month before Easter, the pastor of our church announced that a special Easter offering would be taken to help a poor family. He asked everyone to save and to give sacrificially. When we got home, we talked about what we would do and what we could do. We decided to buy 50 pounds of potatoes and to live on them for a month. This would allow us to save $20 of our grocery money for the offering. Then we thought if we kept our electric lights turned out as much as possible and didn't listen to the radio, that we'd save money on that month's electric bill. Darlene got as many house and yard cleaning jobs as possible, and both of us babysat for everyone that we could. For 15 cents, we could buy enough cotton loops to make three potholders to sell for a dollar. We made $20 on potholders. That month was one of the best of our lives. Every day, we counted the money to see how much we had saved. At night, we'd sit in the dark and talk about how the poor family was going to enjoy the money that the church was going to give to them. We had about 80 people in the church, and so we figured that whatever amount of money that we had to give, the offering would surely be 20 times that much. After all, every Sunday the pastor had reminded everyone to save for the sacrificial offering. The day before Easter, Osi and I walked to the grocery store and got the manager to give us three crisp $20 bills and one $10 bill for all of our change. We ran all the way home to show Mom and Darlene. We had never had so much money before. That night, we were so excited we could hardly sleep. We didn't care that we didn't have new clothes for Easter. We had $70 for the sacrificial offering. We could hardly wait to get to church. On Sunday morning, the rain was pouring. We didn't own an umbrella, and the church was over a mile from our home, but it didn't seem to matter how wet we got. Darlene had cardboard in her shoes to fill the holes. The cardboard came apart, and her feet got wet, but we sat in church proudly. I heard some teenagers talking about the Smith girls having on their old dresses. I looked at them in their new clothes, and I felt so rich. When the sacrificial offering was taken, we were sitting on the second row from the front. Mom put in the $10 bill, and each of us girls put in $20 bills. As we walked home from church, we sang all the way. At lunch, Mom had a surprise for us. She had bought a dozen eggs, and we had boiled Easter eggs with our fried potatoes. Later that afternoon, the minister drove up in his car. Mom went to the door, talked with him for a moment, and then came back with an envelope in her hand. We asked what it was, but she didn't say a word. She opened the envelope, and out fell a bunch of money. There were three crisp $20 bills, one $10 bill, and 17 ones. Mom put the money back in the envelope. We didn't talk We just sat and stared at the floor. We had gone from feeling like millionaires to feeling like poor white trash. We kids had such a happy life that we felt sorry for anyone who didn't have our mom and dad for parents and a house full of brothers and sisters and other kids visiting constantly. We thought it was fun to share silverware and see whether we got the fork or the spoon that night. We had two knives that we passed around to whoever needed them. I knew that we didn't have a lot of things that other people had, but I never thought we were poor. That Easter day, I found out we were. The minister had brought us the money for the poor family, so we must be poor. I didn't like being poor. I looked at my dress and worn-out shoes and felt so ashamed that I didn't want to go back to church. Everyone there probably already knew that we were poor. I thought about school. I was in the ninth grade and at the top of my class of over 100 students. I wondered if the kids at school knew we were poor. I decided I could quit school since I had finished the eighth grade, and that was all the law required at the time. We sat in silence for a long time. Then it got dark, and we went to bed. All that week, we girls went to school and came home, and no one talked much. Finally, on Saturday, Mom asked us what we wanted to do with the money. What did poor people do with money? We didn't know. We never knew we were poor. We didn't want to go to church on Sunday, but Mom said we had to. Although it was a sunny day, we didn't talk on the way. Mom started to sing, but no one joined in. And then she only sang one verse. At church, we had a missionary speaker. He talked about how churches in Africa were building out of sun-dried bricks, were built out of sun-dried bricks, but they needed money to buy roofs to put on top of the churches. He said $100 would put a roof on a church. The minister said, "Can't we all sacrifice to help these poor people?" We looked at each other and smiled for the first time in a week. Mom reached into her purse and pulled out the envelope. She passed it to Darlene. Darlene gave it to me. I handed it to Osi, and Osi put it into the offering. When the offering was counted, the minister announced that it was a little over $100. The missionary was excited. He hadn't expected such a large offering from our small church. He said, "You must have some rich people in this church." Suddenly, it struck us. We had given $87 of that little over $100. We were the rich family in the church. Hadn't the missionary said so? From that day on, I've never been poor again. I've always remembered how rich I am because I have Jesus. See, God is a God of simplicity, and He wants to make our lives free and easy, burden-free, clutter-free, light in soul. That's God's desire for us, is that we would live that. And I believe that in this Jubilee year, He wants to give us that chance. I believe that this is a set-aside year that we can take advantage of, that He wants us to learn some of these simplified principles. And so I want to challenge you in this area of our finances. I'm challenged, and so I want to pass that challenge along to you. This is something that God wants to do. I'm convinced it isn't about Pastor George. It's not about the planning team and what they're planning for a message. I believe that God is speaking to us in this Jubilee year because He wants to release us into a freedom that we've never known before. And that especially when it comes to finances, that we would find maybe for the first time in our lives an uncluttered soul, that we would find a freedom that we've never had before. So I'm convinced that tonight something that you've heard has challenged you. Something that you've heard has stood outside of the bounds of what you're comfortable with, and that's a good thing. And so I want to pass that challenge along to you. I want to say, if you've never tithed, or if you're only partially tithing, take that challenge, set aside 1 month, and test God. I dare you. I dare you to do it. I guarantee you, He's not going to disappoint you. If you've never saved before, or if you feel like your finances are so tight that you can't save, squirrel away $5 or put away $50, whatever your income you think will allow, but start putting something away for that winter, that financial winter, in obedience with God's word. Don't spend money or quit spending money on things that you don't need. Quit spending money trying to keep up with the people next to you or spending frivolously on things that you feel like you want. And learn to be content. Learn to be happy with what God's given to you. And it's a lot. Open your eyes and your ears to God's promptings to share what you have. Big things or little things. Opening up your home to let somebody stay with you if you have an extra space, or giving somebody your extra car to use, the missionary that's in town, or whatever God would prompt in your heart. And then begin to be thankful, like Heather said to us tonight. Thankful for that cup of coffee that just spilled all over you. Thankful for everything that God has provided for you, and recognizing over and over again in those thankful statements, God, you gave me all of this. All of this is from you. It's not from the work of my own hands. It's not because of my own intellect. It's not because of my own ability and my own resources. God, this is from you. And begin to be thankful for all of those things, big things and small things. Amen.
We hope that this message has spoken something personal to you. If you would like more information about our church family or service times, please call us at 303-424-2121 or visit us at our website, www.fbci.org. Faith Bible Chapel currently meets in our Family Worship Center, located on the corner of 62nd Avenue and Ward Road.